Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hi there, and welcome back to New Books in Latin American Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Elena McGrath, one of the hosts of the channel. Today we'll be talking to Neil Garrity about his new book, The Polyphonic Machine, Capitalism, Political Violence, and Resistance in Contemporary Argentine Literature. Neil is a Leverhulme Early Career Fellow at the School of Advanced Study and the Institute of Latin American Studies at the University of London. Welcome to the show. I wonder if you might tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about how you came to this project.
Hi there. Thank you very much for having me on. How did I come to this project? That's a great question. I guess I really need to go all the way back to my undergraduate studies to sort of describe how this came about. And I completed them at the University of Glasgow in Scotland. That's my sort of native home. And at the time, I had a wonderful teacher, Karen Benoventi, who taught a good course on Borges, and I really thoroughly enjoyed that course. And then as I moved on and I moved down to Cambridge to do postgraduate study, first the master's and then laterally the PhD, I've been getting increasingly interested in Argentine literature, and then started to explore that further and formulate ideas about Argentine literature. I guess I focused in on texts that reflected in some way, and not necessarily a purely reflective manner, on themes of violence broadly understood, especially around the last dictatorship in Argentina, and the intertwining of sort of political violence with capitalism. So the project gradually focused in on three authors who engaged with sort of Argentine history in that manner, but they were also very theoretically literate. And that's the case for Cesar Aira and Marcelo Cohen and Ricardo Biglia. I think Argentine society, or certainly Buenos Aires society, is very literary and also incredibly well-versed in sort of contemporary theory and philosophy. And that's reflected in these texts and was something that really grabbed me. And that was sort of the genesis of the idea, sort of consolidating around reflections on violence and capitalism, but doing so in a manner that was very sort of theoretically inflected. Maybe I think that's kind of the genesis.
That makes a lot of sense, and all three authors really do combine those two impulses. So what made you structure the book around, in particular, pairing Pilia and Aira, who, as you note, are not often considered to be on the same page, as it were?
I think in the sort of existing criticism, there's a tendency even to, we could say, read Aira and Biglia as sort of polar opposites in their approach to literature. And Aira wrote a very famous, or perhaps infamous, article that decried Biglia, and especially Respiración Artificial. And that's sort of consolidated into a kind of critical commonplace. And I don't want to overlook the important differences between the two authors, but I was certainly, through my reading, I felt that there was closer parallels than had perhaps been recognized previously, and that maybe Ira's condemnation and rejection of Piglia was not as absolute as he presented it at first. Ira is a very slippery author in many ways, and he's very difficult to pin down to certain positions, and I felt that maybe this was another one that could be explored and questioned somewhat. And I felt that there was a way of reading their literature where they could come into a sort of co-functioning that could be productive and interesting. And certainly in that light, I also felt that Cohen would be an essential sort of additional author to help pull out some of these similarities and develop what I could sort of see developing between Ira and Piglia. And yet, I guess in a certain sense, it comes back down to the sort of theoretical angle that I could perceive in all three authors' work. I think that's sort of what was happening there.
That makes a lot of sense. So you start with Ira, which I think is another very interesting choice, and you're sort of reflecting on his positing of violence and capitalism as sort of foundational to Argentina, right? And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about what made you start there and what you think that foundation allows us to see.
So I guess it comes down to how I read Ira's novel, Emma la Cautiva. Ira has a whole series of novels set in 19th century Argentina and the Pampa, and Emma la Cautiva is one of these. And while Ira is not considered to be an overtly political author, I did feel that in this novel there was a latent political commentary. And I didn't think it would... it was published in, I think it was 1979, and it seemed far beyond coincidental that was in the midst of the Argentine dictatorship, and at the same time as the centenary of the conquest of the desert, at least the final episodes of the conquest of the desert, which the campaign led against the indigenous population in Argentina, and its final very destructive phase, or for certain historians, the final genocide of the indigenous population, led by Julio Argentino Roca. And so I feel that this temporal coincidence, which others have noted as well, provided a way of reading Ira's novel that reflected on what that moment might signify historically. The consolidation of the nation state, the beginning of a capitalist economy based on agro exports, and then also around a similar time, someone like David Binias is starting to consider that moment historically, to argue that the indigenous population were the first disappeared in Argentine history. And I could see that argument of Vinias's reflected in Ira's novel. So I felt it gave a way to sort of ground the later discussion of the most recent dictatorship historically, in a sense. And we could look at that moment of the conquest of the desert as the beginning of a cycle of violence that would be repeated over the century, the naming of a internal enemy, quote unquote, as subversive and as dangerous to the nation, and that needed to be corrected, if you like.
So moving on to sort of the second section where you engage with Cohen's works, and you you sort of suggest that Cohen is more able to identify continuities in the post-dictatorship period and continuations of a society that is built around control because he was writing from the outside. Can you reflect a little more on what role Cohen's analysis plays in your book?
Cohen went into exile during the dictatorship and lived in Barcelona. And he does have certain texts where he talks about living far away and news drifting over to him of what's happening in Argentina. And then with the return to democracy, he moves back to Argentina. And I don't want to overplay that sort of personal biographical argument, but I do find it interesting that Cohen moves back and in a period that has sometimes been conceptualized as a sort of springtime for the people, and the end of this dictatorship, which has been incredibly violent and has disciplined society in a very extreme way. Cohen's novels around about this time still focus on very restricted enclosures within which discipline is applied in a very violent, although that violence may be structural or isn't necessarily always the brute physical violence that one might expect. But there seemed to be something of a contradiction between the opening up of Argentine society and Cohen's continual focus on spaces of enclosure and containment and control. And then when I started reading through his novels, he reflects an awful lot on mass media culture and how that becomes a mechanism of control. So I consider that Cohen, for me, his novels sort of look at some of the systems of control that continue beyond the end of the dictatorship, or they metamorphose and they may express themselves differently, but this idea that there's still elements controlling populations and limiting the freedoms that they may have gained. So that's how I read his literature, and I read it as a literature of transition, but a transition that's not given a very positive inflection, if you like.
It strikes me that both of those historical moments, both the campaign of the desert and also the transition, are moments where you can really see the link that exists between capitalism and political violence in Argentine society.
I think that's right. I mean, yeah, I think and lots of people have written about and reflected on those ideas. And certainly in the Argentine case, if the last military dictatorship attempted to sort of establish a sort of neoliberal economy, especially through the actions of Martínez de Hoz, they weren't entirely successful, and it's only then with a delay and with the election of Carlos Menem in the 1989 and his structural adjustment program that reaches fruition. And for someone like Leon Rosichner, a very well-known Argentine philosopher and thinker, he argues that this is the sort of realization of the dictatorship's plan, and that Argentine society therefore contains a sort of disguised terror that's carried over from the dictatorship through this sort of economic policy, and this idea that society was given a sort of choice between freedom, or you could gain a freedom by accepting the market. That was the sort of, what would you call it, the pact that society kind of made, if you like.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
So in that context, can you talk a little bit about your third and final section where I think you see the most potential for resistance emerging in the works of P. Lea?
Yeah. The three sections are not necessarily laid out chronologically, if you like. With the Ira section, I begin with a chapter reflecting back to sort of 19th century history and its parallels with what's happening in the late 70s. And then I argue that when he comes to write about the opening of the Argentine economy under Menem, he also reflects back on the sort of revolutionary impetus that was prevalent in the late 60s and 70s in Argentina. And then with Cohen, I look more at the development of power and control, as you mentioned, in the post-dictatorship period. And then the third section is about, I was going to say it's interesting, that's not really for me to say, but in the first chapter, I returned to Biglia's Respiración Artificial, which is a very celebrated novel written during the dictatorship, which it reflects on the dictatorship, but in a very oblique manner. And then in the second chapter, I look at La Ciudad Ausente, which comes later and reflect on the opening of the Argentine economy again. So the section's really, as well as a reflection on Biglia's writing, it's also pulling together certain other strands in the book as a whole. So I argue that in Respiración Artificial, Biglia also returns to Argentine history in a manner similar to Ira and Imola Cautiva, and does so to reflect on the power and the sort of systems that sustained the philosophical systems that sustained the dictatorship during this exercise of power. And then I argue that in La Ciudad Ausente, there's a sort of nascent description of this forms of control that are much more deeply elaborated and described and imagined by Cohen. So in that sense, it pulls together the book in a kind of almost sort of straightforward fashion, if you like. But then I also feel that Biglia engages, but not necessarily directly, but has very similar or parallel concerns, and his work can be read very productively with the work of Gilles Deleuze, and that opens up alternative conceptions of being, or rather becoming, that posit a way both for literature and people to resist these philosophical systems that I believe he argues sustains dictatorship, control, and violence, and which are very closely intertwined with capitalism. And then this second sort of argument, this more abstract philosophical argument, if you like, also links back through the previous two sections, and that I feel that Ira very definitely is influenced by Deleuze's conception of becoming other, a sort of spontaneous and spectacular metamorphosis that releases productive energy and can alter society by challenging established norms and rules. And that in Cohen, he looks actually at how that release of energy can actually be captured by capitalism, how capitalism develops to absorb that potential. And then with Biglia, I'm looking at how he uses literature to as a means of sort of engaging that process of becoming, opening up new avenues for being and resisting in a sort of abstract sense, I guess.
It strikes me that so you begin your book with this discussion of the author as someone who is who potentially only exists because of forces of coercion in the market, and then Piglia in particular as someone who plays with this idea and plays with the idea of Argentine literature as something of plagiarism, and plagiarism is resistance. But then your work itself is also kind of in the way you structure the book, you are also kind of reflecting back on that tension that you see in the works between historic time and this moment of becoming. Did you set off in the beginning to write that way, or was that something that came out of the process of writing the book itself?
Yeah. So yeah, that's right. And the introduction opens up with a reflection on Foucault's arguments about the author function, as he describes it. I just felt that we should attribute that. not strictly yes. My idea, alas. But you're right. And I did feel, and I continue to feel that not just for me, but for all of us engaged in sort of academic research, structure is a place where we can really be creative and where we can express ideas in a very creative but quite subtle manner that could be engaging for our readers. And that's certainly something I tried to do. And it, certainly with the authors I was dealing with who write in very different manners, but in incredibly engaging ways, I definitely wanted to try and reflect what I was talking about in my work itself, if you like. So I tried to structure the book in a way that would contain sort of two arguments, if you like. One which is a sort of historical development reflecting on violence and capitalism that runs, as we've seen or as we've been talking about, from the 19th century through periods of dictatorship and then up to the opening of the Argentine economy in the 1990s. But then I felt that there was this second sort of argument growing, if you like, as I was writing the book, is more about these non-linear connections that appear and flourish or bloom and create sporadic connections between the authors that undermine or challenge that historical progression. And so although in some ways the format of the book might appear very standard as three sections and one for each author, and we move in sort of historical periods, each section also ends with a extended kind of meditation, maybe on the sort of machinic, to borrow Deleuze's term or Deleuze and Guattari's term, the machinic connections between the authors to bring them into a different form of sort of open totality. And as you say, in that I'm definitely influenced by by the authors themselves primarily, and all three authors show a particular preoccupation with Kafka, and in the case of Ira and Cohen, we know that from things that they've written that they were particularly taken by Deleuze and Guattari's book on Kafka, and Piglia as well was certainly interested in Kafka in a very, very deep way. So I use Deleuze and Guattari's book on Kafka as a sort of hermeneutic tool to pull out these machinic connections, and those final reflections are primarily looking at their work through the lens of Deleuze and Guattari's book on Kafka. And then with it, what you were referring to, I think with these ideas of plagiarism and the sort of creative potential of plagiarism, which is obviously hugely important for Piglia, and we know he's drawing it really from Borges and some others, but primarily Borges. And then we also know that that's in a sense hugely important for Deleuze and his entire conception of difference and repetition, which he even cites Borges's Pierre Menard in the preface to Difference and Repetition as a sort of perfect example of what he's going to go on to describe. Now, I'm not suggesting that my book is plagiarized. That's not the case. But it's certainly, I tried to incorporate a lot of different voices by using a lot of citations to try and give a sense of the kind of polyphony that can come through that method of writing, that use of multiple voices to express a single voice. And that's something I tried to do, and tried to sort of creatively use citation to reflect what I was talking about. I think, and yeah, I mean, it's so some of those ideas were there from the start, and others came out through the process of writing and organizing material, and it gradually took the shape that it had at the end, I think.
It's a fun read. Well, this seems like a good moment to ask you then about the title.
Okay,
And about the work of the machine, the polyphonic machine.
Yeah, so the title is, the machine, certainly referring back to Deleuze and Guattari and their idea that books are assemblages that create functional connections with other texts and other systems of knowledge, and that are capable of sort of spontaneous and sporadic creativity, also very closely connected to their conception of the rhizome. And certainly the machine part is me referring to the three authors as a sort of singularity that is inherently multiple and generative of new connections between the three authors and plural and in essence polyphonic. And again, it as we move through, and certainly if we come back to Deleuze's idea of the univocity of being and the plane of immanence, these are inherently polyphonic types of unity, if you like, which is another way of expressing sort of multiplicity. And so I felt that was something I was striving towards, and that was the point at which I kind of pulled the book together at the conclusion, this reflection on sort of many voices expressing a kind of singular argument, if you like.
So I know that... I know that some of the authors, I know that Piglia in particular was sort of concerned with the role of Argentine literature more globally and wanted to sort of posit a standing up with the rest of the world. And so I wonder if these works which taken together definitely allow us to reflect on the specificity of the Argentine dictatorship in new ways. Do they also allow us to sort of speak to processes of capitalism and violence beyond the nation itself?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. There's certainly, there's another tension in my book, and I'm sure in others as well, but between the forces of capitalism, if you like, which are necessarily, at least in the contemporary manifestation, globalized, and the forces of globalization, if you like. And yet, I do focus on one specific country and retain this idea of the nation as a sort of useful concept. So there's a kind of tension there between the sort of transnational and the national. But I certainly feel that the Argentine case, as these authors write about it, becomes like a sort of paradigmatic example of the functioning of capitalism in a sort of brute form that allows us to see with particular clarity processes that are happening elsewhere, but perhaps in slightly different manners. But it sort of allows us to grasp the sort of reality of how that works. It becomes a sort of a localized application of globalized forces, if you like, which definitely play out in a very specific way and in a very specific context. But I think there is a mobility to those ideas and to how these things are reproduced elsewhere. Certainly in the book, when I reflect on this, I draw on Doreen Massey's work on the difference between space and place, in a way. And I guess I kind of look at Argentina as a place in Massey's terms, where forces come together and interact and produce things in a sort of localized but open and inherently multiple way, where capitalism, I guess, would be something closer to space, where there's sort of a generalized multiplicity extended over time and space, where it's more of an abstraction, I guess.
Yeah, I think the book does a really elegant job of weaving all those strands together. I was wondering what you're working on right now, and if you have new projects that you're excited about.
Since producing the book or finalizing the book, I've been doing a bit more work on film. I have various different articles on films, not just from Argentina, but from elsewhere in Latin America as well. I've been focusing specifically on an Argentine filmmaker called Jonathan Parel, who looks at processes of sort of memorialization of the most recent dictatorship in a very experimental manner. His films are very beautiful, but they're very challenging in that they only feature fixed camera positions and real-time shots of extended or prolonged duration of objects and spaces that are in some ways connected with the dictatorship. And they feature largely no narrative and almost no human personages. So I've been looking at his films quite a lot, and then more recently I've started a longer term research project, which is looking at the artwork of Leon Ferrari, another very important artist from Argentina, and Ferrari has made very political art. It's that critiques and condemns the most recent dictatorship, but he ties it with a critique of the Catholic Church. And I'm starting to look at his images to sort of ask what theology may look like if we took Ferrari's work not just as a radical condemnation of the Church, but as a challenge to sort of theological thinking, to ask what new forms of theology that might produce. And it actually just a couple of days ago, a book that I co-edited with a colleague, Adriano Macida, just was just launched, and that's called Creative Spaces, Urban Culture and Marginality in Latin America. And that's looking at the ways in which seemingly marginalized spaces in Latin America can become loci for creation and creativity, and how that may play out. And I was really happy with that volume. I think it's come together very well. And it's a very interdisciplinary volume. You have contributions from planning, from architecture, from history, from film studies. That was a really good project as well.
Congratulations. That sounds fascinating as well.
Cheers. Thank you.
Well, Neil, I think we've taken up a lot of your time, so I want to really thank you for being on the show. It's a great project, and it was really fun to talk to you about it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. That was really great to talk to someone about the book, and thank you again.